Welcome back to Simply Superior. I'm Robin Washington, and we're joined by Rick Lubbers of the Duluth News Tribune. Hello, Rick.
Hi, Robin.
And our own Danielle Kading of WPR News. Hi, Danny.
Hi, Robin.
So, Danny, Wisconsin Point is the site of Ojibwe burial grounds dating back to before the time of contact. Those grounds are now being repatriated to the Fond du Lac Band.
That's right. Thursday, the Fond du Lac tribe celebrated, along with dignitaries from both Wisconsin and Minnesota, over the return of those burial grounds on Wisconsin Point. The land transfer was made official by the city of Superior, and the remote strip of land offshore from Lake Superior marks the ancestral home of the tribe that settled there as early as 400 years ago. But in 1918, nearly 200 Ojibwe graves were removed from the burial grounds of Wisconsin Point. The site represents the endpoint of the Ojibwe's migration story for the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior Chippewa, and at least seven generations were laid to rest at the cemetery there, including the community's leader, Chief Joseph Osagi. And not only were the remains removed from Wisconsin Point, living tribal members at the time were also uprooted, including Colleen Aird's parents, and Aird, who turned 100 years old this week, says the return of the burial grounds is another reason to celebrate, and she's a direct descendant of Osagi. And many people spoke at the two-hour ceremony at the Black Bear Casino. That included Minnesota Governor Tim Walz and Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers, as well as Wisconsin's U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin. And Superior City Councilor Jenny Van Sickle was recognized for her role in facilitating the transfer, along with Superior City officials. And when I caught up with Fond du Lac Tribal Chair Kevin Dupe after the event, he said he felt like he should be at Wisconsin Point. And he said that through the actions taken today, that he felt that their ancestors would finally be able to rest.
Well, in related matters, four northern Wisconsin tribes are appealing a case on taxation on tribal lands.
That's right. A federal appeals court ruled on Monday that the state can't impose property taxes on tribal lands that have changed hands without congressional approval. That decision was made by a three-judge panel from the 7th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, and it's part of a lawsuit that four northern Wisconsin tribes filed back in 2018 fighting taxation of their tribal lands. The Lacouturay, the Lac des Flambeaux, the Red Cliff, and the Bad River tribes sued after the state imposed property taxes on land within their reservations, and that land is immune from state property taxes under an 1854 treaty with the federal government. But the state argued that some of that land had actually been sold to non-American Indians before the land was sold back to tribal members. And so because it fell out of tribal ownership, they're saying that it can be taxed. The three-judge panel disagreed with that. They said the land isn't taxable without congressional approval. And they said that only Congress can diminish tribal sovereignty and the treaty. I caught up with Governor Tony Evers at the event for the Fond du Lac land transfer, and he said during his speech that the state of Wisconsin is committed to honoring treaty rights. However, afterward, he said that they had not yet made a final decision on whether they would pursue steps to consider more legal action following the appeals court ruling. So a decision has not yet been made, and we'll see what happens in the future, whether this would go all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Well, heading all the way out on the water, where the water meets the shore, the port of Duluth Superior may be getting a boost, particularly on the Superior side.
That's right. If you remember, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act was passed last year, and that included nearly $17 billion for waterway and coastal infrastructure. And Superior is benefiting from that because they won a roughly $8 million grant to fund repairs of a facility that's no longer being used in the port of Duluth Superior on the Superior side. And that money will go to fund construction of a new sheet pile retaining wall and also improvements to rail and roads and stormwater. The whole purpose behind that is they're looking at increasing their capacity for imports and exports, and the docks that are currently available on the Superior side are in disrepair, so that limits the number of ships that they can bring in for freight. And by expanding the capacity of the Superior port, they think that they can address some supply chain issues that would make things easier and possibly bring in more ships from coastal ports, which, as you know, during the COVID-19 pandemic have been pretty clogged up and there have been a lot of delays. And so hopefully this is a way to provide an economic benefit for the region.
All right. Rick, on the Minnesota side, nurses in Duluth and the Twin Cities have authorized a strike, though that doesn't mean they're headed to the picket line just yet.
Yes, nurses in the Minnesota Nurses Association have voted to authorize a strike. The MNA announced late Monday night. The 15,000 MNA members in the Twin Ports and Twin Cities voted overwhelmingly in favor of the strike, according to a news release from MNA. The vote was taken among nurses at 15 hospitals under 7 hospital systems. Nurse negotiation leaders are now authorized to call a strike following a 10-day notice to hospital employers. Chris Rubesch, who's the first vice president of MNA and a registered nurse at Essentia Health, said he couldn't release specific vote tallies, but said it was very clear that nurses were in favor of the strike. Any strike would be the first time Twin Cities and Twin Ports nurses take such an action together in contract negotiations. Rubesch said that 15 hospitals involved in the vote are in discussions for when a strike could happen and what the strike would entail. He said if notice for a strike is given, all participating MNA bodies would strike at the same time. Hospitals affected by the strike would be announced at the time the 10-day notice is given. In separate statements, Essentia Health and St. Luke's said that they are creating contingency plans in anticipation of MNA member nurses going on strike and to ensure that there will still be patient care available. Nurses have been in contract negotiations across the entire state since March and have been working without contracts since July 1. In a recent statement, St. Luke's says it has offered a 10.25% raise for nurses over 3 years. At a news conference Tuesday morning, Rubis said that staffing is the main issue statewide that has led nurses to take action. And he said St. Luke's is deflecting from that issue by talking only about wages.
All right. Well, going back into the archives, and a reminder that there's no statute of limitations on murder, a cold case from 1986 in Hibbing has been resolved.
Yes, it has. 36 years in the making. It took a jury 9 hours across 2 days to reach a verdict in the murder trial of Hibbing's Michael Allen Carbo Jr. The 12-member jury found Carbo, 54 years old, guilty of 2 counts of first-degree murder while committing or attempting criminal sexual conduct on Nancy Doherty in her 1986 death. Carbo will receive automatic life sentence without possibility of parole when he appears for sentencing September 30. Carbo was just 18 at the time of Doherty's death. The 38-year-old mother of two was found dead in her bed on July 16, 1986, having been sexually assaulted and strangled. Carbo, who lived within a mile of the victim, did not have any known relationship with Doherty, and he was never a suspect until Chisholm Police contracted with a genetic genealogist to compare crime scene DNA samples against those in privately maintained databases and then developed a profile of the suspected killer. DNA from several sources at the crime scene was conclusively shown to be a match with Carbo. Now, Carbo's attorney did not dispute the DNA evidence, saying that his client engaged in consensual sex with Doherty before she was killed by another person. But St. Louis County Prosecutor John Hollitz told jurors that Doherty's rape and murder were intertwined and no other credible physical evidence at the scene could point to a different killer.
So all the evidence was preserved all this time?
Well, they had preserved it at the time of the crime. I believe it was in storage. And then once technology caught up with it, you know, then they contracted with this genetic genealogist and formed a database on the suspected killer and eventually matched that with DNA from Carbo Jr.
Well, also on the range, Minnesota said goodbye to a respected longtime legislator.
Yes, longtime Iron Range lawmaker David Tomasoni died at the age of 69 after a battle with ALS. The Minnesota Senate announced Friday morning, August 12. Tomasoni, an independent lawmaker from Chisholm, was first elected to the Minnesota House of Representatives in 1992. He was elected to the Senate in 2000, where he served the rest of his time in the legislature. Thomas Olney received his diagnosis with amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, also known as Lou Gehrig's disease, in 2021, and continued to serve as senator. In his last session at the Capitol, he sponsored a bill to provide $20 million in grants for ALS research and $5 million to caregiving for people suffering from the disease. The bill passed overwhelmingly in the House and Senate and was signed into law by Governor Tim Walz this spring. Prior to launching his nearly 30-year career in the Minnesota legislature, Thomas Olney played hockey. He was a standout defenseman at Chisholm High School. He was a four-year letter winner at the University of Denver from 1971 to 75 and skated in the NCAA Frozen Four twice. He also played briefly for the New York Rangers minor league system, but then played professional hockey in Italy, his family's ancestral home, for 16 years. He won his first campaign in 1992 and served in the House of Representatives for 8 years before then beginning to serve in the Senate. Thomas Olney represented the Democratic Farmer Labor Party until 2020, when he left the party to form an independent caucus. He was elected president pro tem for the Minnesota Senate for the 2021 session.
And he will be missed. Well, we've been speaking with Rick Lubbers, the executive editor of the Duluth News Tribune. Thank you, Rick.
Thanks, Robin.
And Danielle Kading, Superior-based reporter for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Thank you, Danny.
Thank you, Robin.
You can stay updated on these stories and all the regional news anytime at WPR.org and DuluthNewsTribune.com. And that's it for this edition of Simply Superior. We leave you with more of the music of Greg Ball. I'm Robin Washington. Stay safe, everyone.